Hi, everyone. Our series on measuring and analyzing culture continues with a close look at how the data you gather about your culture may not be telling you the whole story. I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. How would you describe your company's culture? Would it be a highly subjective and qualitative assessment? Or would you have some hard data to prove certain truths about what it's like to work at your company? For many organizations struggling to improve their overall culture, and in particular their speak-up culture, doing so can be impossible if they don't take steps to measure and analyze the everyday work realities of their leaders, managers, and employees. That's where a formal culture survey comes in. But even then, conducting a survey and making the best use of the data it produces can be two very different things. Data is data, but context is everything. And when it comes to diving into the data your culture survey produces, helpful analysis can separate truth from perception and offer a helpful roadmap towards organizational transformation. With us today to talk about this is Emily Anderson, a culture analyst on the data and services team at Ethisphere, where she assists in carrying out culture assessments to evaluate organizations' ethics and compliance measures. Previously, she worked on ethics audits to determine companies' protective measures in areas such as ESG, workforce automation, workers' rights, and artificial intelligence. Emily, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Bill. I'm so excited to get into some data and culture.
So, Emily, my first question for you is probably the most important question in this entire series, really, which is, when you measure culture, what are you really measuring?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. And I think there's kind of a layered approach to my answer. The first layer is probably the most obvious one, which is employees' familiarity with company culture, which for a lot of organizations will look like company resources, policies, procedures, codes. But really the more interesting measurements come when you start to evaluate employees' perceptions of these things. So you might get employees telling you how effective they think their training is or how readable your codes are. And then the third piece, and it works really hand in hand with that second piece, is how your tools are actually informing your program. So employees might say that they think that the training is effective in certain ways, but when you take a survey of a whole population, you learn sort of about the broader effect of your training, of your code, of any of the policies and procedures that you have in place to protect your managers, your employees. And you start to pick out sort of the data that speaks to not only people's perceptions of things, but if you have codes directing what misconduct may or may not look like, what reporting should look like, what a speak up culture should look like. And then you have this data that tells you how often people are reporting, where they're reporting it to. It allows you to paint a big picture that includes the resources, what employees think of the resources, and how those resources are actually directing the whole company culture itself.
You know, for companies that are going through it for the first time, are there any sets of data that they're usually surprised to see? Like, is there usually a kind of a common disconnect between what companies think they're going to get back in a survey and what they actually get back?
Yes. I think in my experience, the most common surprise to them is how people are preferring to make reports of misconduct. And I think they're surprised for a couple of different reasons. One, organizations are putting a lot of company resources often into building out platforms for people to make reports, whether this is web reporting, hotline reporting. But what the data really shows us is that people feel most comfortable making these types of reports to human beings and oftentimes to their managers. And so people are often surprised, one, just by the fact that the resources used to build out this platform were not as effective as they hoped that they would be. Two, I think that organizations are surprised to learn that employees feel more comfortable making these reports to a human being, which points often to programs that have established ethics and compliance programs. It points to some of the gaps in those programs, because if people are making a report to an automated system, there's usually a follow-up procedure to that. That system goes somewhere, and so there's somebody monitoring it, or there's a hard copy for people to look at. But if it's more of a word-of-mouth reporting, you might learn that your managers don't know exactly what to do with those reports, or you might learn that people are speaking to their colleagues, and colleagues don't know whether to take this as a venting session or if they should report to a manager. And right. So how people report is not only surprising because of the methods of reporting, but because it starts to sort of pull out some of the gaps in training and in the speak up culture in general.
I can imagine a lot of companies, especially if they're undergoing their first survey, may get into it, or there's a temptation of going, you know what, we're going to have the survey done, but we're pretty confident that we've got a great system that works beautifully. And I'm sure the survey is just going to confirm everything that we think about it. There seems like a pretty good chance for there to be a bit of a surprise going, you know what, we did not do as well as we thought we did, or things are not as great as we thought we did. Do you find that that's a common occurrence?
Definitely. I think one of the greatest parts of my job is that I get to work with a lot of different organizations that are really passionate about creating a safe, reliable workplace for their employees. And so it's really disappointing when you've committed time, resources, and a career to doing that, and maybe there are gaps in it. But I think that's the nature of the type of work that we do that is changing all of the time. That there are always going to be new gaps. And so I think it's important to sort of take that in stride and learn that a good program will be a flexible one. And so you might do this survey, you know, however many years in a row, and you're going to find new gaps. And that just kind of gives you a new area to zone in on for the next year.
So we talked about some of the types of data that a culture survey can reveal to an organization. But once companies get that data, no matter what the data is, what are some next steps that they can, you know, take to do something really productive with that data? Because data on its own isn't magic. It can't actually affect change.
It depends on what the results are, really. So if you get results that reflect low performance because employees don't really know what's going on in your program, the thing that you can do to be effective is figure out how you're communicating with your employees. Because if you have a really great program and employees don't know about it, the strength of your program is less relevant. But often what we're seeing is a mix of a couple different things. Strong programs that are showing gaps in areas of organizations. So I think a really effective way to look at this is to figure out where things are going really, really well and where things are showing more opportunity for growth, and sort of pick on your strongest players. You know, if you see that one department is reporting a lot of the misconduct that they're seeing, has really great reviews of managers, maybe you want to talk to those managers and ask what they're doing to build relationships that are strong enough that employees are feeling comfortable making these reports. And evaluate what's the difference between that manager and your lowest performing demographic.
From the organizational perspective, what is the best way to know what data to gather? Because one imagines that there's the data you want to gather, and then there's the data that is actually helpful to gather.
I think the best way to know what to gather is to know your program and to know your organization. And that might sort of sort itself out in a couple different ways. But one of them is the maturity of your program. So you mentioned earlier that this might be an organization's first time running a survey. We see organizations that don't even yet have an established compliance program approaching us saying, we want to get this survey to sort of get a temperature read on the company culture to know where to start when building a program. And so some of the data that organization would gather compared to an organization that's run this survey six times with an extremely mature program just wouldn't be as valuable. So knowing sort of where your program is at and its maturity can really help guide what types of questions you want to ask. And the other side of that is knowing what's going on in other places in your organization. So if your organization is measuring click metrics, if you're sending out pulse surveys, if you're doing exit interviews and roundtables, it's likely that you're gathering some sort of demographic information, whether that's a department level, manager level, tenure with the company. but gathering data that's comparable. So if you're doing a culture survey, you want to make sure that you're gathering information about the respondents that is comparable to the information that you gather in those other places, so that you have sort of a cohesive picture, because one culture survey, while it can give you a lot of information, is going to paint a picture of company culture. But if you're able to pair that with click metrics and with pulse surveys and with the other efforts that the organization is making at a company level, you can paint sort of a more holistic picture that might fill in some of the gaps for you.
So what are some common threads that you have seen from the various culture surveys that you've conducted in terms of common challenges, opportunities, strengths, successes, etc.?
The most common areas of opportunity that I'm seeing right now are in areas of misconduct and pressure in the workplace. I think that those are both big uphill battles for a lot of organizations. And even in the organizations that are struggling in these areas, is not necessarily for lack of effort or for a lack of strength in their program, but because when you're dealing with a lot of people, it really only takes one incident to sort of skew some of those results. But what I am seeing is that the biggest way to make an impact on those results are immediate managers. And we're finding that the frequency with which immediate managers are speaking to their teams and to their employees about ethics directly informs employees' willingness to comply with ethics measures, to report when things are not going well, and to act in favor of their company culture to a really, really strong degree. So there's a really strong correlation between the relationships that employees have with their managers and the relationships that employees choose to have with their organization.
One of the areas I'm particularly interested in is organizational pressure. I know it's one of the eight pillars of an ethical culture that we talk about. It's a really foundational, you know, piece of just culture and speak up culture in general. Can you talk about what, when we say organizational pressure, what do we really mean by that? And what are some examples of, you know, some interesting data points that you have seen off of assessments that speak to the realities around organizational pressure?
What we really mean by organizational pressure is employees feeling a sense of urgency around their work that might choose them to make decisions that directly go against company policies, laws, or general sort of ethical approach to culture. Often when we come across this, it is not the case that employees are feeling this pressure because somebody's telling them to. It's rare that we find organizations where managers are saying, you know, meet this quota at any cost. It's more often the case that they're saying, our numbers are low, we have to really make sure we meet this quota, and employees feel that pressure to make numbers or to make sales or, you know, whatever it may be, to make partnerships and deals, to satisfy clients and customers. And they internalize that as a need to cut corners. So we often say to clients who are experiencing some trouble in the area of pressure that it's less about what's being said and more about what's going unsaid. So a really effective measure against pressure is being super explicit. When a manager is delivering a rally the troops sort of message, we're really trying to hit this quota, to be sure that that is followed by that that should not happen at the expense of our ethics, at the expense of the code of conduct, at the expense of culture.
For an organization that is thinking about undertaking its first culture survey, are there any pieces of advice that you would give to them? Apart from, yes, absolutely, take the survey. But apart from that, though, as they prepare for this sort of thing or have an idea of what to expect from the whole experience, what advice could you offer?
I would say my biggest piece of advice would probably be sort of an open-mindedness to the process, and to sort of prepare yourself for the true vulnerability that it takes for an employee to respond to a survey like that. Even though it's anonymous, employees are really invested, obviously, in their workplace. And so to be forthcoming about their experiences in company culture is something that will be in the organization's best interest to take as seriously as you can. Opportunities for growth don't necessarily speak to a lack of strength in the program, but might point to places where organizations may want to sort of bolster their resources. And so being able to thank employees for their candidness and for their response and being able to sort of lean into the results that they get is sort of the best advice that I can give for the first time, because especially for larger organizations, it's, you mentioned earlier, you might go into expecting one thing and seeing another. Right. And so I think trusting that your employees are answering the survey because they care and despite the vulnerability that it requires of them is sort of your next best step toward a successful ethics and compliance program.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for coming on the show today to share your insights with us on the subtleties of measuring culture.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill.
To learn more about the great work that Emily and the rest of the Ethisphere Culture team does with organizations around the world, be sure to check out the spring issue of Ethisphere Magazine, available at magazine.ethisphere.com. And for a wealth of free reports, presentations, webinars, and more, including the foundational 8 Pillars of an Ethical Culture, visit the Ethisphere Resource Center at ethisphere.com/resources. And finally, to connect with the Ethisphere Culture team and learn how you can measure and elevate your organization's culture, please visit ethisphere.com/solutions. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business.